You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Tuesday. Good morning to you. Mike McNamara for a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Happy to be here. Yeah, that's the way that is. Happy to be here. And, tomorrow, fly to the East Coast, fired up to do that. Gonna go speak in Orlando, Florida. I've never been to Orlando. Yeah, never. I'm a Disneyland guy, man. I'm not a Disney World person. Come on, West Coast like Snoop Dogg. Yeah, exactly like Snoop Dogg. So anyway, so that'll be exciting, and looking forward to that. And then speak on Thursday at 1 o'clock East Coast time, and then fly back home Friday evening. So I might be able to go watch a little bit of spring training. Yeah, I don't know if I could squeeze it all in, but we'll see. Maybe go over and watch the Yankees play a little bit of spring training if my nephew's not playing down in Florida. So anyway, we'll see. We shall see. So yeah, welcome on a. Yeah, so this week, exciting. And in fact, I was up early today. I was up at 5 and rehearsing. Yeah, I have this. So post-traumatic winning is about, in the long version, it's, you know, I tell people to allocate 3 hours. Okay, and so somebody introduces it, so that takes 5 to 10 minutes. And then normally somebody will close it, and that might take 5 minutes. And then if you take 2 breaks, so that's like 10. 2 breaks, 5 minutes each is another 10. And somebody closing it is 5. That's 25 minutes of not post-traumatic winning. So 2 hours and 35 minutes is the length of what gets the presented material. So what I do to prepare, and so then when somebody says, okay, Mac, you know, we've allocated 2.5 hours. Okay, so that means I've got 2 hours and 5 minutes to do it if everything else gets stuck in there. So then I've got to rehearse it to the point where I can do it on a regular basis in 2 hours and 5 minutes. So that's what I've been doing. I got up early. And so what happens is you split the presentation into segments, right? The first one is the welcome, and the next part is the general situation, and then you time yourself and all these things. So that's what I was doing. And then you know, I have for post-traumatic winning, the script that I worked on last night is about, hold on, I'll tell you how many pages it is. It's 21 pages long, the script for post-traumatic winning. Yeah, and what the script looks like, every page, it's a PowerPoint documentation. So every page has 9 boxes in it, right? And they go across. So it starts in the upper left-hand corner, right? And it goes, right? And so there's a picture of the slide, and then there's a, and then below that there's bulletized in there's the title of the slide underneath the slide, and then there's bullets, right? And the way I like to outline is these are the first things that you say, right? So, for instance, when I talk about transformation, I talk about, you know, you can't medicate yourself to a good place. You can't talk bad things to good. The only way you can get to good is you have to give to get there. That's how you get there. And so I have like, you can't talk to good, dot, dot, dot. You can't medicate to good, dot, dot, dot. So yeah, 21 pages of that. And so, and then little notes of things like, don't say this in this version. Don't say this. Don't go, you know, with an X across it, you know. So anyway, trying to get the presentation to have, always have the power that I know it can have. And so, so cool stuff. So I'm working on that today, and then go to dinner tonight with some Marine friends down in San Clemente. And, so go do that and then come home and continue to rehearse and pack and get ready to go. So, but I can tell you, it's for me, it's always, these are incredible opportunities, and I know what's going to happen. They don't know what's going to happen, but I know what's going to happen. And what's going to happen is somebody's going to get their, there's going to be a whole bunch of people to get their life changed. And there's going to be a whole bunch of people that walk in there with not, you know, they, you know, and again, this is an Air Force audience. And so they've had a rough year. And so the post-traumatic winning message is a message of hope. It's a message of, you can do this. I promise you, man, you can do this. And so it's exciting. It's really exciting to do. And I know, again, I know, as I've said before in the program, it's kind of a ambush that they walk into. And they don't know, you know, what's waiting for them, but I sure do. That's the thing I look forward to the most is, you know, some of them, you know, are pretty exasperated by, in this case, the Air Force, I mean, the number went up 33%. I mean, that's a huge increase. And so, where's the light? Where's the light at the end of the tunnel? And some of them, and then all of a sudden you see post-traumatic winning. And now after a year, you know, it has data that goes with it. It has, you know, hopefully, you know, IG findings. You know, that say, yeah, you know, we went in on a visit and we were, you know, completely, you know, overwhelmed and impressed by what we saw there. And it's attributed to this program. Yeah, how cool is that? And so when you can share that kind of, you know, real world validation, then you might have yourself something right there, son. So then to see how that impacts them, that we could take this. It's not something that's really onerous to implement. You know, it doesn't take a ton of money to do it. And the impact looks to be substantial. Oh, my God. And you see how people get excited. And the other thing is that I love about post-traumatic winning is that, like I say, it's not a military thing. And so you see them get so excited because, you know, my brother has been dealing with this forever, and I'm so excited because this comes from inside our culture, so it will resonate with him, right? And, you know, my brother got out of the Army in, you know, XYZ year and blah, blah, blah. And so it is just, as I said, I mean, it's just awesome. So I can't, I always get geeked when I do it. So, and then I had, you know, I had more people reach out to me yesterday. And, yeah, my life right now is pretty cool, man. I'm not gonna lie to you. It's pretty cool. So they reached out and they said, "Hey, we've heard about your program, and we're really interested in it." And two of them were sergeant majors that reached out to me, and then another one was a commanding officer of an organization, and he had heard about it at something that his wife attended, and he said, "Hey, I heard incredible things about this." I said, "Yeah, it's the truth. Pretty cool. Not going to lie to you." And he said, "That's awesome, man." He said, "That's awesome." So, yeah, so exciting stuff. And then last night, I got a call from a girl who you're going to meet on Monday. And her name is Patricia. She got my number, excuse me, from a guy named Neil, who I met last week. And they're friends. And I don't know if you've seen it, but a Marine went missing in the Arizona wilderness. They found his car, I want to say, at the first part of December. That's when I saw the story. And that is Patricia's brother. And she's looking for him today. And looking, you know, for either him or his body, you know, to find and to take care of. So anyway, she called me and she said, "Hey, I got your name." And so, you know, had a chance to talk to her for a couple hours last night. It was just an awesome conversation. She's a wonderful person and a great sister, and you know, trying to do the right thing relative to her brother. And so just, you know, life's tough, man. Life is tough. You know, and, you know, she's the one, you know, she told me he's the one that taught mental health classes. Yet he had his own infrastructure issues that he dealt with. And, you know, ultimately they think that he took his own life. Drove down a road that you could barely drive a Jeep down in his vehicle. And so they have not located him. Since I want to say he went missing in September, October. Yeah, they found his car in early December, and still no trace of him. So you're going to meet her on Monday. And as I said, she's a wonderful person, and you'll get to hear her story. So today, what we're gonna do is I ran across something that I want you to hear. It's a study from CSIS, which is the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Colonel Kansian, Mark Kansian, who appears on the program, most recently talked about General Berger. And what General Berger is going to do with the Marine Corps. Honestly, I don't. The more I consider, you know, the Marine Corps without tanks, right? Why is that a good idea? Oh, well, we're going to have this. Okay, well, what if you don't have that available? We're going to wait for the Army to come save our ass? I don't, you know, I don't know that I care for some of the stuff I've heard. And I've had people say, "Oh, you know, it's not, you know," I don't like what I've heard, honestly. And so, you know, the Marine Corps less lethal organization, you know, at the organic level, you better be able to take care of yourself, because, you know, when weather can't rescue you, when GPS isn't there, then what? So Mark Kansian came on to talk about the Commandant's, you know, I think the article is entitled "Not So Fast, Marine Corps." But anyway, and when I was kind of poking around on CSIS, I found that My Lai thing. that he was a part of. Well, I also saw a thing about Iran, and I'll tell you, Bob Schaefer, who was on CBS for years, he's the moderator. It's called the Schaefer Series. And so this is done in late September after the bombings of the, you know, Saudi Arabian oil facilities, but before, right, the hit on Soleimani. So Seth Jones and John Alterman are both from CSIS. And from the New York Times, David Sanger, right? He's, you know, Sanger's a big time, you know, reporter for the New York Times, and a very respected one at that. So I want to share that with you. As again, I think that it's important, you know, that as we've learned about China, as Grant has taken us there, there's different ways to learn about Iran. I love listening to stuff from Al Jazeera, and I want to play for you something that I emailed Grant I emailed him the story about the coronavirus being leaked out of a lab, right? And here's Grant's response, right? So, and this was on the show yesterday. Alex and I were talking about it. And so Grant read this article. He said, actually, to me, this sounds very plausible. And the explanation is this, that the only, like, level 4, right, lab in China that handles viruses is in Wuhan, the city of Wuhan. Okay, so the theory is that people working there sold animals on the black market, and those animals, right, probably unwittingly to the workers there, those animals had this coronavirus in it. That's what and then they lied about it and covering it up. And you can see the motive for the lie, right? It's our lab. So anyway, Grant wrote me back this morning. Actually, to me, this sounds like a very plausible explanation. And if I had to choose one, this would be it. Was it a bioweapon that malfunctioned? Doubt that. But a science experiment that leaked? Maybe so. Industrial hygiene safety in China is about the same as in Homer Simpson's nuke plant. That is common knowledge. Have always thought countries where people who are not manifestly insane routinely crap in the street ought not to have nukes or biological weapons. Anyway, that's actually pretty funny, right? So Grant's take on that. So anyway, Grant's been awesome teaching us about the Pacific. And, you know, I think it's, you know, I'm endeavoring to do the same thing with Iran. And so you're going to hear. And CSIS always does great stuff. I mean, the thing about Milai was fascinating. If you haven't listened to that segment, listen to it. And so you'll hear a pretty robust panel after we check on the news. And then tomorrow you'll hear another Iwo Jima Day. And what you're going to hear is a whole series of interviews. You're going to hear General Zinni talking about Iwo Jima. You're going to hear Mary Reinwald, who sat on both Hewley boards. And you'll hear this in chronological order. You'll hear from... who's the Irish historian? What's the guy's name? Stephen Foley. I've interviewed him a couple times. In fact, the last time I interviewed him, and he's like giving me the Heisman right now. Can't do it right now. I don't know if he's working on something they're producing or whatnot. But anyway, last time he was on, he teased that that there was more to come. And I said, what? He said, yep. And that was that, you know, Rene Gagnon was not in the flag raising. That it was a guy named Harold Pye. His nickname's Pye Keller. Yeah. Yeah, two guys named Harold in the flag raising. Go figure. You'll hear Stephen Foley, and I just find it fascinating. You'll hear Don Niemeyer. He was the president. He was the director of the Marine Corps Historical Division. You'll hear him talking about it. And I just think it's fascinating, the whole issue of the flag raising and how after all these years, right, after all these years, it was still an issue and that we had got it so wrong. So you'll hear that. And then Jeff Kenny Timlin will join me on Thursday, and the chef will join me on Friday. So all of that coming up this week. And then you'll meet Patricia on Monday. I think Matt Kiker is going to come on. You know, I want to follow up. You've met these people, right? And they become part of the All Marine Radio family. And so Matt Kiker out, you know, what's he doing? How a year later, how has this thing called post-traumatic winning impacted him? I forwarded him an email that somebody sent me. It was that guy who couldn't complete recruit training because he was allergic to red fire ants. And so anyway, he was the one that spoke to that Marine who helped save that little kid, right? And he said in the email, he said, I shared with him your story about the helicopter. I shared, you know, with him, you know, Matt Kiker's story. So I forwarded that to Matt. And Matt was like, Mac, this is like the coolest stuff going. Like when this thing bombs into my life all the time, like I'm just speechless. So, but I, you know, we'll catch up with Matt and find out what he's doing and how his life's going. So that going on. And let me share with you an email that I got earlier today from the guy's name is Anthony. And he is trying to get back in the Marine Corps. I guess he needs some kind of waiver. But anyway, he went up to the National Museum of the Marine Corps on a Saturday or Sunday. And when they had the big program, Woody Williams speaking there. And he sent me an email this morning. What a trip. I wasn't able to listen to Woody Williams due to the crowd size. But while I grabbed a bite to eat at Tun Tavern, which is the restaurant upstairs, I sat next to a couple from Riverside, Illinois. We spoke of Iwo Jima and how we couldn't even think how it must have been in person during that fight. While we waited to order, the husband slid a photo across the top of the bar and explained his wife's father is in a famous photo from Iwo. Her father, PFC James Michaels, landed on D-Day and was injured on the 21st. On the 23rd, he was part, obviously not evacuated. Well, maybe he was injured on the 21st of March. On the 23rd of February, he was part of the 40-man patrol that went up Mount Suribachi and planted the first flag. While not a flag raiser, he was providing security and is seen with his M1 carbine in the photo attached. Anthony. Yeah, I mean, cool, right? Cool. And there's a couple guys. So anyway, awesome stuff. Awesome stuff. So good morning to you. In order to make the day official, the United States Marine Corps Band gets us going. Good morning. And this is dedicated to Patricia, who I met last night, and also to Neil, who gave Patricia my phone number. And, you know, God bless you, Patricia, for being such an awesome sister. We should all be so lucky. And she's still looking for a brother today. And so she'll get up, and she left me a message. She said, I may not have cell coverage as I'll be out, you know, on the reservation looking for my brother. But leave me a message, and I'll call you back. And then I called her back and spoke to her. So this is dedicated to both Neil, who I met through the Sugar Bear Foundation, Jennifer Carrazzo, and then Neil helping somebody else by introducing me to Patricia. So this is dedicated to both of them.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
When the danger is perceptible and the cost of acting are low, the failure to act guarantees that the threat will grow and the ultimate cost will be higher. Every day that goes by makes North Korea a more dangerous country. You don't like their behavior today? What do you think it'll be when they have nuclear weapons that can be delivered to American cities? Do you want to wait till then to act, or do you want to act now?
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, time for us to check the weather. It's going to be 82 today here in Southern California on the coast. Yeah, that means 90s inland and probably 100 out in the desert. What the hell? Global warming. Whatever. Cloudy in 49 in Quantico. Cloudy in 62 at Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune. Mac, there's no R in that word. Shut up, okay? I didn't mean that. Well, I kind of did. Sunny in 61 already in 29 Palms. Sunny 58 at Pendleton. Dark cloudy 68 in Hawaii. Dark cloudy 71 as Okinawa warms up. In Lashkar Gah, they warm up. Dark cloudy 64. Wow. And in Ramadi, dark cloudy 61 degrees in Iraq. Currently at the home of All Marine Radio. Foggy in 55. Looking for high of 82 today, 81 tomorrow, and 82 on Thursday. Boosh! Yeah. That's a look at your weather. When we come back, we are going to go ahead and check some news headlines. As we work our way through a Tuesday. Here on, you know what, I have to tell you, it does make me happy that baseball's on, even if it's the preseason. makes me happy. Yeah, it does. Put it on, turn it on mute. And you want to know why it makes me happy? Because the fucking news isn't on my TV. Yeah, I figured that out last night. That's what made me happy. And the judge did not reach a ruling in whether the coronavirus people should come to my hometown. Yeah. The good news is that they're over by Collins High School, so that's her problem, right? Exactly. They're a stone's throw. They're like a six iron from Collins High School. Yeah. Anyway. NIMBY, not in my backyard. Wait a minute. How about like not in a major urban area in the nation, right? If you got it, right, you're going out to the, send them to 29 Palms, right? Send them, you know, put up some tents in Lavik Lake, right? Or the Quackenbush, right? Put them out there. They're not supposed to be, oh, you want to treat them humanely so their feelings don't get hurt? Not, right? Get them out of here. Get them the hell out of here. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed. But for some veterans, the uniform isn't so easily removed. The emotions experienced while serving continue to weigh on them. Life after service is different. Many veterans find transitioning difficult, and daily life is no longer as enjoyable as it once was. Some feel overwhelmed and lost. But that uncertainty doesn't take away from their strength and courage, nor does it take away from the sense of duty veterans carry with them. The transition from service is different for everyone. If you are a veteran going through a difficult time, or know one who is, the power of one person, one connection, one act of compassion can make a difference. For free 24/7 confidential support, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1, or visit veteranscrisisline.net.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit veteranscrisisline.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
American music. Montana man likes this, even though he's from Connecticut. Time for us to check out the news on our way to talking about Iran today. The top stories, right? Here you go. Thousands in military community poisoned by carbon monoxide over the course of a decade, according to a new study. About 6,400 troops and their family members were poisoned by carbon monoxide in the past decade, a military study found. Some 24 service members died from breathing the colorless, tasteless, odorless, and deadly gas. Most of the cases were deemed accidental, but around 11% of active duty service members intentionally harmed themselves, and one case was ruled an assault, said the study published last month in the Defense Health Agency's medical journal. No details were provided for the assault cases or the deaths. Troops working in repair or engineering jobs accounted for more poisonings than those in other career fields. While motor vehicle exhaust was the second most common source of carbon monoxide poisoning in confirmed cases among active duty troops, those working in motor transports accounted for just 3.2% of the cases. Military personnel face unique and deadly sources of significant CO2 exposure. Tanks, howitzers, and armed helicopter crews, as well as troops firing missiles or small arms indoor firing ranges, can be exposed to the gas. Well, what about the families? Cases were diagnosed at more than 190 military installations and locations worldwide. Fort Carson, Colorado, had the highest number of confirmed cases, 60 during a 10-year period, followed by Naval Medical Center San Diego with 52. Last August, two service members and three family members were treated at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, for carbon monoxide exposure. It was later determined that the residents of more than 80 homes at the base were at risk because of blocked vents in laundry rooms. What? Blocked vents in our laundry rooms. Is that a self-inflicted wound, or is that something that somebody else did? Film at 11. We have to delve into that. U.S. forces in Afghanistan strike ISIS during the partial truce with the Taliban. Yeah, so what do you think? We're just going to sit around with all this ordnance and all these airplanes? Let's whack the Taliban. Yeah, pull out the target list, boys. We're serving that thing. We're going deep on that son of a bitch. Right? The Taliban, they're on hold. Yeah, ISIS, stand the fuck by. Yeah, so that's going on in Afghanistan. Okinawa Marine, who saved a drowning pregnant woman, gets the service's higher award for non-combat valor. That is known as the Navy Marine Corps Medal. Major William Easter received a Navy Marine Corps Medal from 3MEF Lieutenant General Stacy H. Well, it's H. Stacy. The H stands for Herman. We used to call Stacy Herman the German. He's not the funniest guy, right? Anyway, Stacy, we served together as captains. In a ceremony February 14th at Camp Courtney, Easter is the 3MEF Theater Security Cooperation Officer from Beaufort, South Carolina. Was also recognized for his heroism by the Japanese mayor of Chadan in January 2019. Quote, "I think I'm just as brave as anybody else in the military," Easter said in the statement. "I was just the right person at the right time. I'm certainly there. I'm certain there are any number of people here who are also the right people and would have done the same thing." On the afternoon of 8 December 2018, Easter was preparing for a run on the Okinawa seawall near American Village when he heard cries for help coming from the shore. An exhausted man had made it back to shore after snorkeling, but his pregnant wife, an American in her 20s, had been swept out and was approximately a quarter mile from land. The man said he was too exhausted to swim out to her. Easter instructed one bystander to call Japan's equivalent of 911 and another to find a flotation device. I could see her in the distance. I heard a little head bobbing there in the water. I looked at it and said, "Wow, that's not a short swim. You're not going to do that very easily." He swam approximately 300 yards out to the woman. She was exhausted by the time he arrived, so he got to her up on the orange circular life preserver he carried. Then he treaded water for about 30 minutes while he waited for emergency services. Chadan fire officials arrived on personal watercraft and plucked Easter and the woman from the sea. "She could have drowned," said Naria Fire Chief Morikatsu Sakihara during the ceremony honoring Major the Marine on January 22nd. Cool stuff, right? Cool stuff. And you see this. You know, when I was talking to Patricia last night, you know, about the benefits of not watching the news. You know, what is the news? Right? It's the shit that they put on so that you'll click on so that they can count your click and then turn that into revenue. They're a business. They're driving revenue in what they report. So what's right, what's truth, and what, you know, takes a backseat to, right, what will make you click that we can leverage into revenue, right, that we can leverage then into profit, blah, 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 blah. A year after a Marine disappeared on a High Sierra hike, his family is still unsure of what happened. This was published in the Orange County Register over the weekend. And I had a number of people that commented to me about the article. What a great article. And it's about a Marine lieutenant by the name of Greg Kraft who went hiking in the Sierra Nevadas. He was on leave, and he was doing a two-week backcountry ski trip along the High Sierras in February of 2019. The article starts, "Every night Greg Kraft turns on an electric candle that sits in the window of his family's Connecticut home. Quote, I turn it on and say, God bless Matt. His voice choked with emotion. In the morning, I turn it off and say, God bless Matt. The candle in the upstairs middle dormer of his Williamsburg Cape Cod style home is lighted so his son Matt, Captain Matthew Kraft, can find his way back home. Kraft was a platoon commander with 1st Battalion, 7th Marines, and 29 Palms, part of the 1st Marine Division that's based out of Camp Pendleton, disappeared while hiking in the Sierras on a hike that started on February 24th of 2019. He had planned the rugged trek for his pre-deployment leave before his unit was scheduled to depart from Afghanistan. The High Sierra route parallels the John Muir Trail with elevations ranging from 9,000 to 1,500 feet. The nearly 200-mile hike that began in the Inyo Forest near Lone Pine was supposed to be completed over the course of 10 days, and Kraft had notified family and the Marine Corps they expected to arrive in Bridgeport on March 4th or 5th. He spoke to his father the last time 2 days before setting out on this hike, and Kraft's dad told him to be safe. And the article goes on, and from his fellow Marines, characterized as an exceptional officer. Quote, many Marines say they love the Marine Corps, wrote First Lieutenant Isaiah Girardo, a platoon commander in the same company with Kraft. They get tattoos of the Eagle, Globe, and Anchor on their chest, and they put stickers on their car and let everyone know. But a special kind of Marine needs no words, symbols, or proclamations to describe their love of the Corps. Their love is found in the late nights at the office, their stoicism in harsh conditions, genuine concern for subordinates, and an obstinate adherence to what is right, regardless of the situation. These Marines live on through their influence and deeds, setting an example to the rest of, for the rest of us. Matt was one of those Marines. So it's a pretty incredible article, and you'll find it in Stars and Stripes. You'll also find it in the Orange County Register. His name is Matt Kraft. So if you Google that, you will find him. Article about the Commandant of the Marine Corps. I took a little grief for not covering this yesterday. Women in more jobs added maternity leave on the Commandant's priority list. So General Berger or somebody took to his Twitter account yesterday. Further gender integration in job fields previously closed to women, expanding maternity leave, and raising the intellectual bar for infantry troops are among the Marine Corps' priorities, the Commandant said. In a series of posts on his Twitter account, General David Berger highlighted the most important matters, which include barring officer and enlisted applicants with prior conviction of gender-based violence and domestic violence. It is unclear why he chose to highlight the ban on applicants with gender-based or domestic violence convictions, which was the first of the measures he mentioned. His spokesman did not immediately respond to an inquiry seeking clarification. The service already prohibits those convicted of sex-related crimes or domestic violence from serving, and such disqualifications can't be waived, said Gunnery Sergeant Justin Cronenberg, a spokesman for the Marine Corps Recruiting Command. Berger's tweets aimed at rectifying gender-related issues within the service, which has the smallest percentage of women in its ranks, has long faced criticism for its gender-segregated basic training and resistance to integrating women into combat roles. Berger called for a review to determine the feasibility of women in the reserves returning to active duty in units and jobs that were previously gender-restricted. The service's leaders should also seek out active duty women in company grade officer ranks to volunteer for infantry, the infantry officer course, and serve in infantry battalions. The Commandant's plans are an attempt to put female Marines in leadership positions, Sergeant Callahan Brown of the 3rd Marine Expeditionary Force said on Monday. So anyway, the Commandant in the news. So, yeah. And there's a whole series of issues he's touched on. I'll get to those in a minute. USNI news. The Navy steps up its coronavirus screening for both families and personnel in the Pacific. So that's in the news. Panel mulls Middle East dynamics after the Soleimani death. The Soleimani death? Is that how we're referring it? John McLaughlin said, there is no way of knowing how long this pause is going to, this pause in the ongoing conflict remains in effect. In January, Iranians launched at least an hour-long missile attack on two American-occupied bases in Iran. Iran in retaliation. I think that somebody needs to check this article. More than 100 American service members received treatment for injuries during the attack. McLaughlin added, neither the United States nor Iran has indicated what covert actions they are taking now or may soon take in the wake of the killing of Qassem Soleimani, the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards. We did not know at the time target and place of an imminent attack on any American facilities, the reason given for the strike against the Quds commanders, McLaughlin said at the Center for Strategic and International Study. But he also added that the United States didn't know the details either before the terror attacks of September 11th. The Israeli believe the targeting of Soleimani had an effect on the actions of the Revolutionary Guard. But Israel's approval brings complications as to how the Middle East views Washington. So, interesting article about the dynamics. And again, Iran's silence. Now, again, is it as simple as Donald Trump looked at them and said, I'm not going after proxies anymore. I'm coming after you? Is it as simple as that? Oh, I forgot to do shithole weather. Damn it. I'll get to it. Here's another article about General Berger. Top Marine says immediate execution items include more gender integration, smarter grunts, and changes to parental leave for adoptive same-sex parents. These are the most important matters for immediate execution. Not one is a war-fighting thing. Interesting. And then everybody seizes on the gender leave. Here's a maternity thing, right? He also wants the Marine Corps to identify the costs associated with implementing a new one-year paid maternity leave policy along with the benefits and risks and make formal recommendations. In another tweet, he said he wants to revise the Marine Corps' parental leave policy to include parental leave for adoptive parents to include same-sex couples. Currently, adoptive parents and same-sex couples already can get leave under the Marine Corps policy. So this article, again, he needs to clarify some of this stuff. All right. Smarter grunts. Commandant also wants smarter grunts. The Commandant called for the Marine Corps to, within 6 months, raise the minimum general technical score required for prospective 0311 Marine riflemen, unless there is analysis that suggests irreparable damage to our recruiting effort or operational readiness. The Commandant wants the minimum requirement for GCT score, currently a score of 90 out of 140, to become a rifleman, to be increased to a score of 100. Yeah. The move is part of the Commandant's goal to make the Marine Corps smarter. It's one of Sergeant Major Troy Black's goals, envisioning a future where staff non-commissioned officers will be required to get college degrees. I don't know that I like that, man. I mean, one of the beautiful things of our staff NCOs is that, I mean, they're construction site foremen. Do we really give a shit if they go to college and have a degree? I don't know. It all fits in the Commandant's vision of the next big war, where we'll need to be smarter. Got it. The final change proposed by the Commandant would affect how fitness reports are calculated. It would eliminate non-observed academic fitness reports. Okay, nobody cares about that. All right, early bird, a couple of stories. Navy and Marine Corps to ban personal firearms for foreign troops. The Navy and the Marine Corps will prohibit foreign troops from buying and carrying personal weapons as the military continues rolling out new restrictions after a Saudi officer carried out a terrorist attack. International service members training with sailors and Marines at bases in the U.S. or its territories face a host of new rules. Well, yeah, but how do you enforce them, man? The guy brings a weapon and doesn't tell anybody. Like, okay, awesome rule. That's awesome. Looks great in the news. Right? The 75th anniversary of the Iwo Jima flag raising, some struggle with history-changing events. Now, if you didn't read any of the articles about the son of René Gagnon, who was, you know, his whole life, you know, kind of the flag raiser that did not fare so well. And people said, you know, he wanted to become a movie star and he wanted to exploit his fame. And, you know, he wound up being a maintenance worker, I think, in the school system in Massachusetts. And so he's not described in subsequent accounts very favorably. Okay. And so this article by Richard Sisk, who's been on this program. On the 75th anniversary of the horrific Battle of Iwo Jima, René Gagnon Jr. is still coming to terms with the fact that his father was not among the six Marines in one of the most iconic photographs of the 20th century, the raising of the flag of Mount Suribachi. Now, the son, right, has been featured prominently in photographs throughout his life, right, with his father when he was younger. You know, now, you know, people write articles and they talk to, you know, René Gagnon Jr. about it. And, yeah, I mean, the last article I saw, he blasted, you know, James Bradley for the way he characterized his father, right? So, quote, to me, this was like a total surprise, a total shock, he said, when the Marine Corps last October confirmed the initial findings of amateur researchers on one of history's most extraordinary cases of mistaken identity. It was Corporal Harold Pye Keller, 23, of Brooklyn, Iowa, and not his father, then 19-year-old PFC René Gagnon of Manchester, New Hampshire, in the snapshot of the group taken by the Associated Press photographer Joe Rosenthal. Gagnon, now 72, of Concord, New Hampshire, said February 20th in a phone interview that he grew up in with a firm belief that his father, who died in 1979, was part of a legend. At age two, his father brought him to the movie set where John Wayne was making The Sands of Iwo Jima. René Gagnon Sr. had a cameo role in the movie, handing the flag to Wayne's fictional Sergeant Stryker. In 1954, he went with his father to the dedication of the Marine Corps War Memorial in Arlington. Growing up, he would occasionally watch the TV sign-off at night with the playing of the national anthem over the screen showing the Rosenthal photo, thinking, my God, that's my dad. For 70-plus years, that was my legacy, more or less. I looked up to my dad for that. And so the announcement that it was Keller and not his father has hit him hard. His comments were always, I'm not a hero. I happened to be in a photograph that represented everyone that fought and died on that island. Now, here's the deal. Gagnon was the one, in the history of all of this, he identified other people that he said were in the photo. He identified Mike Strank. You know, Ira Hayes said, if you identify me, I'll kill you. Told him that when they were back in Hawaii. And he wouldn't give up Ira Hayes' name initially. But he's the one, right, that said he was in it and named Bradley and named other people, you know, initially. So it was Gagnon that was the source of that said, I was in that. Quote, this is, again, Gagnon, son. Well, and the Marine Corps goes out of its way to say, hey, look, you know, like John Bradley wasn't in there. And, you know, I said a week ago that, you know, when I see that picture, I see, you know, Bradley's pain and that he knew he wasn't in that picture. Right? I mean, and I say that, you know, he looked at that thing and said, you know, isn't one of these dumbasses going to look at my uniform that day and notice that I'm not even close to, you know, having anything on my body that guy's wearing right there? At some point, somebody's going to know, and I'm going to have to deal with all this shit. And so when I see Bradley, I see him as a tragic figure, you know, that he came back and participated in the war bond drive, and that was the Marine Corps' official position, and, you know, he was not going to take him off. And then that, to me, is further affirmed that they would not want to be part of that because, you know, Corporal Keller, right, and PFC Schultz, they went home and they want to know part of that. Keller never told his daughter, yeah, I was in that. I saw her interview. Like she said, we knew he was on the island. We knew it was wounded, and he didn't talk about it very much. But now I look up, and to think that that's my father, you know, it blows me away. So so the Marine Corps has gone out of its way to say, hey, look, you know, a lot of things happen. Nobody, you know, intended to deceive anybody. So this is Gagnon Jr. After the Marine Corps, you know, made all kinds of statements. Hey, Rene Gagnon, you know, he went up there. He took a flag up there. He was up there, you know, and he fought, right? Quote, and this is Gagnon Jr. He had a good part in both flag raising, the son said. He survived, and he went on the war bond tour, and he was following orders. This is from Dustin Spence, who does work with Stephen Foley, you know, researcher. Gagnon's still a hero. Being on Iwo Jima, he's a hero. Being a runner, he's a hero. Spence, who teaches high school in Sacramento, California. What? We're homies. He's right there doing exactly what he's supposed to do. I don't think we're ever going to know exactly what happened, why different names got attached to the photograph, Spence said in a phone interview. Spence also said he was extremely confident that the controversies over the identities of the six who raised the first flag and the six who raised the second flag have now been settled. After 75 years, finally we have the names, he said. There's also been confusion through the years over the people who raised the first flag. But I think, right, I think, you know, based on my conversation, there was going to be revisions to who raised the first flag. All right, so the first flag raisers are this. John Bradley, right, from Antigo, Wisconsin, right? Doc Bradley, right? First Lieutenant Harold G. Schreier, 28, of Bradenton, Florida. Sergeant Ernest I. Boots Thomas, 21-year-old sergeant of Tampa, Florida. Sergeant Henry O. Hansen, 26, Hank Hansen, as he was known, of Boston, Massachusetts. Corporal Charles W. Lindbergh, 24 years old, from Grand Forks, North Dakota. My guidon that's sitting on my wall right here has one signature on it. I took it down when Chuck Lindbergh came to Grand Forks to rededicate the Veterans Monument after a flood. And I got a chance to meet him. He was pissed, man. He was pissed. He was pissed about the second flag raising. Private Philip W. Ward, 19, of Crawfordsville, Indiana. The second flag raising. right? Sergeant Michael Strank, born in Czechoslovakia, raised in Franklin Borough of Pennsylvania. Corporal Harlan Block of Yorktown, Texas. PFC Franklin Sousley, 19 years old, of Hilltop, Kentucky. PFC Ira Hayes, 22, of Gila Bend, Pima Indian Reservation in Arizona. Corporal Harold Schultz, 20, of Detroit. And Corporal Harold Pye Keller of Brooklyn, Iowa. And the last quote in the article says this, and it's from Rene Gagnon Jr. "That's a picture of my father, of the flag my father fought his way up that mountain to bring up there so that somebody could raise it." So it's interesting how the son has had to make peace. I mean, how jarring. I mean, and the same thing for John Bradley. John Bradley writes the book, right? Flags of Our Father. Turns out his father's not in the picture. And then Gagnon, right, whose father gets treated, you know, not so well in just about everything I've ever seen. He finds out his dad's not even in the image either. Right, he finds out that he's so interesting stuff. Top five stories in Early Bird are as follows. Number one, Trump clinches $3 billion military equipment sales. U.S. President Donald Trump said on Tuesday that India would buy $3 billion worth of military equipment, including attack helicopters, as the two countries deepen defense and commercial ties in an attempt to balance the weight of China in the region. Yeah, I think the United States and India. I mean, that's good. I'm all about the president going to India. Number two, U.S. and South Korea may scale back joint exercises over the coronavirus. Three, yeah, South Korea dealing with it. Number three, Pentagon now has five principles for artificial intelligence employment. Okay. Who's that? Let's see. I want to see the list. Five principles are: one, responsible. Oh, my God. This is going to sound like the leadership traits, right? DOD personnel will exercise appropriate levels of judgment and care while remaining responsible for the deployment, development, and the use of artificial intelligence capabilities. So does that mean somebody's going to get court-martialed when the computer says shoot that shit and it gets shot and the wrong thing happens? Equitable. The department will take deliberate steps to minimize unintended bias in AI capabilities. That's computer. I'd have to go get all the footnotes on that. Traceable. The department's AI capabilities will be developed and deployed so that staffers have an appropriate understanding of the technology's development, processes, and operational methods. This includes transparent and audible methodologies, I could say it, data sources, and design procedures. Four, reliable. The department's AI capabilities will have explicit, well-defined uses, and the safety, security, and effectiveness of such capabilities will be subject to testing. Five, governable. The department will design and engineer AI capabilities to fulfill their intended functions while possessing the ability to detect and avoid unintended consequences. You know what? That sounds like a lot of gobbledygook to me. Once you turn the computer on auto, stand the fuck by, man. Stand the fuck by. And everybody's going to do that, right? Wrong. This is the way, this is the world according to Garp. This is the way we want the world to be. The way the world will be vastly different. I'm just saying. That's like, yeah, sir, this is the way it's supposed to work. But if you uncheck that block and hit OK, watch what happens. What just happened? I think you shut off the power in North Korea. Right? OK. How do I check that block again? Well, it's right here, sir. Number four, inside the newly revealed nuclear ballistic missile warhead of the future. Nice. Number five. In West Africa, U.S. military struggles for scarce resources as terrorism threat grows. Yeah, I thought we were unasked in Afghanistan. Overseas operations. right? Coronavirus. Jamming precision artillery and long-range drone strikes on Libyan battlefield offer lessons learned for U.S. military. Got it. As the Yemen war intensifies, an opening for al-Qaeda to resurrect its forces. I don't know why I'm struggling reading right now, but I am. U.S. forces in Afghanistan, CENTCOM monitoring coronavirus amid reports of infections in the region. A furlough of South Korean workers would have negative impact. We already saw that. Pentagon defends its handling of traumatic brain injuries after the Iranian attack. All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear... So I'll tell you, you'll enjoy it. I mean, CSIS always does awesome stuff. But you're going to hear something called the Schaefer series. Bob Schaefer, I believe he was on CBS News for years. Anyway, but the panel includes from CSIS, Seth Jones and John Alterman, right? Both prominent people. And then from the New York Times, David Sanger. And they the discussion about what happened and what comes next, including options for the President of the United States. Now, remember, this is after the missile strike in Saudi Arabia and before the Soleimani strike. So don't go anywhere. Interesting stuff. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on a Tuesday.